Good afternoon. Welcome to the mini assembly. Can everyone hear me okay? Okay. Good afternoon and welcome to the mini assembly. My name is Justine Sullivan, and I welcome you here just to make sure that we're all in the right place. We are taking up two issues today at this mini assembly. One is a bylaw change eliminating the finance committee of our UUA board, and the other has to do with financial limits on our presidential campaign. And I'd like to start us off with a reading to center us and to remind us that this is holy work that we do, living our faith in community. This is On the Brink by Leslie Takahashi Morris. All that we have ever loved and all that we have ever been stands with us on the brink of all that we aspire to create. A deeper peace, a larger love, a more embracing hope, a greater generosity of spirit, a deeper joy in this life we share. So the purpose of a mini assembly is to allow us to propose amendments to any bylaw changes that are brought by our Board of Trustees. This is the only way to bring amendments forward, is through this mini-assembly process. We'll take these issues up one at a time, and the way this will work is if you have any amendments, you will meet with our attorney, Tom Bean, over here at the end of the table, and he will help you word them in a way that it will meet the goal that you have in proposing your amendment. So if you know you have, does anyone know that they have some amendments to propose? Okay. So in just a moment, I'm going to suggest that you start out writing those up. So what we'll do is we'll have a statement from a member of our Board of Trustees about the amendment, about the bylaw change proposed. Then we'll have some time for discussion, and then we'll take up any amendments, and we'll do that for each of the two issues. So I'd like to introduce our Board of Trustee member, Susan Weaver, who will present the first item.
The UUA board takes its fiduciary responsibilities seriously. Since becoming a much smaller board 2 years ago, we have discussed all of our financial decisions as a whole board rather than delegating deeper exploration of financial matters to the Finance Committee. Our discussions have included input from the financial advisor, the treasurer, and other officers of the association. Full finance discussion by the whole board could not have been effectively carried out by the larger board of 23 trustees. As a much smaller board of 11 trustees, we have found such practice consistent with our responsible governance. These proposed bylaw changes simply institutionalize this board's recent practice of making its financial decisions the responsibility of each trustee. Important in these amendments is the role of financial secretary. This board member will be responsible for facilitating financial conversations and decision-making among the trustees. The financial secretary will serve on the board's executive committee, just as the finance committee chair now does. These amendments also remove one trustee representative from the audit committee. The board will continue to be represented on the audit committee by the financial advisor. Communications between the board and audit committee will remain strong without the unnecessary use of board resources that providing two representatives on the committee requires. The UUA board believes these amendments strengthen its ability to govern responsibly and recommends you vote for them.
Thank you, Susan. So if you have amendments to propose, I encourage you to come over anytime starting now and go over those with Tom. And let me also introduce the other folks here up on the panel here. We have, as you met, Tom Bean, our attorney, Susan Weaver, Board of Trustee member, Michael Solwasser, another Board of Trustee member, Donna Harrison, Board of Trustees and first vice moderator, and Stephanie Mary Caron, who is doing too many tasks to enumerate, but she is recording the amendments for us so that they will appear on the screen for your consideration. I also want to let you know that we have folks online who may be joining us in the conversation, so we will include their comments as we go through the discussion portion. Yes, do you have a point of order?
A point of order. Right now you're discussing the financial committee versus financial secretary. What if your concerns were about the campaign finance?
We'll get to that one second. So that will come up during this mini assembly as well. Okay, thanks for that clarification. So this would be a time if people have comments or questions to come to the microphone and we will hear you about this item. And please introduce yourself and tell us where you're from.
My name is Kurt DeWeese. I'm from Springfield, Illinois with the Abraham Lincoln Unitarian Universalist Congregation. Kurt DeWeese.
Thanks.
From Springfield, Illinois with the Abraham Lincoln Unitarian Universalist Congregation. First, I have some concerns about the process that's been followed, since I don't believe when there was consideration of reducing the size of the board, actually allowing it to assume this kind of responsibility, as well as developing or essentially bypassing or ultimately doing away with the Finance Committee. So I think to some extent the board has presumed a function that was not a part of the original restructuring. The other is, as I'm a Finance Committee chair in our congregation, our board is 10 members. We don't presume that every new incoming member has the expertise or the interest in focusing on this financial process, especially budget development. We go through a process that's fairly extensive in developing our budget. There's some institutional knowledge that carries forward. There are people who are focusing on their attention on their own budget needs, and they can bring that to the Finance Committee without the board having to deal with sort of the detail of the actual budget. I think to some extent, this is really not good process for developing the budget, which can be fairly extensive, as well as giving you the detailed or dig down that you need in this process. I'm concerned that the board, the new board, has become insular in terms of the way that it functions. Okay. It has somehow reduced the scope of what it really should, how it should operate.
Okay.
And that there's
I think you have expressed your concern, so I want to let someone respond to the two issues that you've raised.
Well, I would make one more point,
okay,
and that is that
point.
I think that you do need a Finance Committee to ensure that there are some checks and balances, some clear oversight of that financial, besides the audit process, but just to be able to regularly alert the board to upcoming issues or budget issues that might develop.
Okay, thank you very much.
First, thank you for those comments. Because we are a policy board, the board itself does not develop the budget in great detail. That is the staff responsibility. We do most of our financial monitoring and decisions through policy. We are presented with the budget. There is a policy that the board brings to us, a balanced budget, and that we review that. We are also, the staff brings us the balanced budget, and that we do review it. And I feel that we also are responsible as a board for financial policy. That is not a committee's, not simply a committee's responsibility, but that all the board must both monitor and decide what our financial policy should be. So it makes sense that the full board does have that discussion. And it also makes sense, although I think in any board you will always need at least, were we not to change the Finance Committee, we would, to the whole board, we would have one half of our board having separate discussions than the board of 11. And we think we can have more full discussions have a more responsible board if we are all involved in those discussions.
So one thing I would clarify, because I think what I heard in the comment was the notion that the Finance Committee was independent from the board. That's not the way the Finance Committee is structured today, and it's not the way it has been structured, I don't think, certainly as long as I've been paying attention. Larry says he doesn't think ever either. The Finance Committee in the bylaws is defined as comprised of board members. So a portion of the board sits on the finance committee and a portion of the board does not. And when we had a much larger board with, you know, 23 trustees on it, it made more sense to have a smaller group of trustees who would dive down into the issues on the finance committee. The way that we've been functioning now is we've named a finance committee, and literally they meet with the whole board there. We talk, and if the finance committee is going to take a vote, some people can vote and some people can't at that point. But the conversations have been with the whole board, and the finance committee has been of the board the entire time.
Would either of you want to speak to the onboarding process, the kind of the qualifications around finance?
Why don't we let our current finance committee chair speak to that? We've got Reverend Sarah Stewart, who spoke this morning in the General Assembly. She's the current chair of the Finance Committee on the board and a trustee.
So what's the question?
The question is how we, is the onboarding process and how we bring new trustees and the whole board to the point where we can have these conversations about finance.
Well, for one thing, we hope that the nominating committee and the nominates and the General Assembly elects people with a certain understanding about how budgets and the finances of a medium-sized organization work. And then there is an orientation process for new trustees that includes an introduction to the way the UUA does its operating budget and its the budgets for all its business sections that Tim Brennan, our treasurer and CFO, provides. I got that orientation when I was a new trustee. Part of what I have tried to ensure in these last 2 years, chairing finance committee meetings that were held with the whole board present, was to make sure that everybody has a chance to ask the questions they need to ask to understand the decisions they're going to make. Because whether you're on the finance committee or not, as a trustee of an organization, you're responsible for the decisions you're making. So everybody needs to get it. And we need to talk about it and ask questions and have them answered until we do understand and we're ready to make those decisions.
Thank you, Sarah. Just checking in with Edward, do we have anyone online? I just want to say a formal welcome to all those that are watching and listening at home. Welcome to our online delegates, and I'm glad that you could be with us. Are there some more comments here? Please introduce yourself and tell us where you're from.
Hi, Jane Sisk, East Shore Unitarian Church in Bellevue, Washington, which is just outside Seattle. I share the concerns that the first speaker raised with you. My experience with organizations is that, and finance committees, is that there needs to be more depth than is consistent with having these kinds of issues talked about in a full board of 11 people. I wanted specifically to ask the question, with the proposed financial secretary position, will that position have any depth other than the staff? I mean, again, my experience is that there needs to be something more than the staff creating a balanced budget and having an entire board of 11 trustees talking about it, that it's valuable to have an intermediate step where there's, I don't care what you call it,
okay,
a finance group that can go back and forth,
okay,
with the staff before it goes to the full board and have some oversight and depth to it. So is there anything around the financial secretary other than the staff input?
Okay, got your question about reviewing that. Okay, do you want to say something about the financial advisor, or does anyone want to add?
Well, I can speak to that. Our the finance chair right now is always just an elected board member. That's the case. We also have a financial advisor who serves as our independent financial advisor on the board, who also raises questions related to the budget and to finance. And we also have, I think, when it comes to the board, there is not an individual right now who I think takes that sort of even if we have a finance committee, it is all board, it is board members other than our financial advisor. And I don't think that at this point, until it comes to that committee, it is not separately vetted in a separate process other than through the treasurer, the finance committee, and the staff treasurer. So I don't think this takes something away in our process that is not already in our process. Larry, do you have anything you'd want to add to that?
Yes.
Yes, I thought so.
And as Larry's coming up, I just want to say that we could be a little more flexible here than in the general session, but I see the line growing, so I am going to ask people to keep their questions and responses to about 2 minutes, and if I feel like we've got the sense of your question, I may cut you off. I don't mean to be rude, but I want to manage the time so that everyone that wants to speak gets a chance. Okay.
I'm Larry Ladd, and finance is my life, or at least for the most recent 43 years. It's and I am serving as the financial advisor of the UUA, and let me explain what that is, and then how I see the role that the board is proposing to take. The specific reason that there is a financial advisor is to make sure that the board has solid expertise available to it on financial matters. It should, in the normal election process, elect people with a good business sense, financial experience, and so forth, but this is a way to guarantee that there is one, at least one person who does that. In the role, that individual does do kind of a deep dive into the budget, not in everything, because this is a large and complex budget. So and many of us might look at this through the lens of a congregation or the lens of a smaller not-for-profit organization. This is a large organization in which you don't want the board to spend their time in digging deep into the detail. That's what staff is paid to do. That is a waste of your board's time. Your board's job is to cast a vision for the future of this association and make sure there's proper oversight and make sure the budget is aligned with the ends of the association. That's its job. So it has a variety of mechanisms, including the existence of a financial advisor, the existence of an audit committee, and a number of other professional advisors that are available to the board and to the association to make sure that no more mistakes are made than would happen at any mid-sized organization. Mistakes get made. There's no doubt about that. But too many fingers into the pie of the budget do not prevent mistakes. They make mischief. They mean, and I say this with all sincerity, I have seen the Finance Committee of the UUA engage in the kind of mischief that often your finance committees in your congregations engage in. You join a finance committee and you advocate for your own interests, whether or your, and particular points of view, whether or not that reflects the interests of the larger congregation. Now, I'm sure that doesn't happen in your congregation. It's happened in many that I have seen. It happened on the UUA board when the finance committee folks saw this was a chance to advocate for the theological schools, to advocate for more money for the ministry department, outside of the structure of the full board. Mischief can be made. And I would advise that we want a board that focuses on the big issues and relies on some on some level of expertise to make sure that significant, to minimize the possibility anyway, that significant mistakes don't get made.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you. There are a couple of people in line for comments, and I. Okay, so we'll take these two final comments, and then I'm going to move to amendments.
I'm taking care of online chats, and I have one from Ethan Contini Field. I don't know his location, and it appears to be a point of order. My understanding, says Ethan, is that many assemblies are for clarifying questions about the resolution and discussion of possible amendments. If someone opposes a motion and no amendment could address their concern, it seems like advocating that position would be out of order in a mini assembly.
Thank you for that point of order. Do you have a clarifying question?
Yes, I do. I'm a novice. This is my first GA, but I'd just like to ask what's...
Would you just introduce yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Patricia Fletcher, and I'm from the Olympic Unitarian Universal Fellowship of Squim, Washington. I just need to know what is the relationship of Larry to the board.
Very good. Could someone just answer that?
I can answer that. The financial advisor is a member of the financial advisor is a member of the board and is elected by the General Assembly for the same kind of terms that the board serves. It's one of three officers of the association: the president, moderator, and the financial advisor. So I sit on the board, and as they will attest, sometimes I preach to them just like I did to you.
I have a question for the board.
Okay, one more question, and then we do have to move to
I'm
amendments.
I'm Madeline Morrow from First Unitarian in San Jose. Does board policy require that the budget is aligned with the ends of the association?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. That's an excellent question, and there is a resounding yes in response to that. All right, so if we have some amendments to come forward, how does that work?
So I am a member of the Board of Trustees, but I also serve as the board liaison to the Audit Committee. And in my capacity as a member of that committee, I'm here to present an amendment recently suggested by the Audit Committee. The Audit Committee supports the amendment that removes the board liaison from its membership. The committee will be considering this year, whether four members are adequate to regularly conduct its business. Its concern is not whether there is now adequate financial expertise, but simply whether their membership number is adequate to ensure regularly scheduled business. So the change in language from four members to no fewer than four members just establishes a minimum, and this will allow the Audit Committee to propose a range of 4 to 7 members in its committee charter, which the board must approve. And that change of a range would permit minor adjustments in membership in the Audit Committee without having to return to the General Assembly for approval. And then the second change that deletes the word three before persons recognizes that there may in the future be more than four members, and it ensures that all members other than the financial advisor are appointed by the board and not members of the board or paid staff of the UUA.
Any questions about this amendment? Yes, please introduce yourself.
Jane Sisk again, East Shore. So is there an independent audit in addition to this group that the board appoints? Is there an independent auditing firm that comes in and looks at the books in addition to this in-house audit?
There is a separate committee called the Audit Committee, and it has, right now, it is made up of five members, which includes three members who are not members of the board or salaried members of the UUA, and they all have professional finance backgrounds. And there is also Larry Ladd, the financial advisor, serves on that committee, and I am a board liaison to that committee. One of the roles of that committee is to select the accounting firm that will do the UUA's annual audit. They also look at the internal control suggestions that is made by that accounting firm, as well as just a regular review of internal controls. And they are right now also looking at risk management for the association. Mm-hmm.
Thank Thank you for that question, and thank you for that response. So why don't we take a straw poll on this? This is a chance to give a sense of the room of this amendment. So all those in favor of this amendment proposed by, it's on the screen here. So these language changes basically to, so that it's a range of a number of people on the audit committee. If you have you have to be a delegate to vote, but if you're in favor of this, please raise your delegate card and we'll take a count. Okay, you put those down. All those opposed? Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Six online in favor.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Are there any more amendments? Are there any more amendments to this item, the Finance Committee change? So let's move on then to the next item, which is spending limits on the financial spending for our presidential campaign, and that will be addressed by board member Michael Saulwasser.
All right. The change before you followed the recommendations of the Presidential Search Committee for establishing campaign finance limits for presidential elections. They have in common with the establishment of the search committee itself the desire to expand the range of candidates for UUA president beyond the list of usual and obvious self-nominating individuals. These limitations are intended to make elections financially accessible to persons with different personal, economic, social and political resources, while still asking the candidate to demonstrate fundraising capacity. They also signal our desire to direct fewer of our resources towards our own internal political process. Limits for spending would be set at a total of $100,000 of cash collected per campaign and $5,000 cash per individual donation. We are asking for information on in-kind donations valued above $500 as an initial monitoring of this new requirement to make sure they remain as known and expected contributions, for example, dinners hosted in homes, and not become an end run around cash limitations. In less substantive changes, categories of reportable donations have been expanded to avoid meaninglessly high detail. And this is pure Susan Ritchie who wrote this. One redundant, unnecessary, unhelpful, obfuscating sentence with awkward clausing in the passive tense has been abandoned. Your UUA board supports these changes.
Thank you, Michael, and we will now have clarifying questions about this amendment. If you,
it's a comment.
Well, go ahead.
I actually applaud.
Would you just
I'm Madeline Morrow from First Unitarian Church of San Jose, in which I am president of the board of directors. I applaud actually the idea of limits. I have two grave reservations about this change in its limitations. Why are there no limits for the election for monitor? Secondly, the most important concern is about the lack of transparency, and I'm frankly shocked that no one picked up on this. In the current system, there's no requirement for reporting until the day that General Assembly begins, and then it's only made to the Secretary of the Association.
So I will suggest that if there's an amendment you'd like to make that would address some of those concerns, this would be the time to do it. Otherwise, I think you should save your comments for the plenary, the general session, where people have a chance to vote this up or down.
I don't have anyone else from my congregation here, I did want to make these comments in case other people hadn't thought about it.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I really feel that this kind of opacity in which you have to make a written request to actually find out what this is means it's an antiquated procedure where money can be used invisibly to keep marginalized individuals from having a chance in an election.
Okay, thank you for that. Would anyone like to address this, or should we move on? Okay, all right. Is there another question?
Hello, my name is Rebecca Keller Scholl, and I'm a delegate from First Parish in Needham, Massachusetts.
Welcome.
First of all, I want to thank you all for your service on the board and in the work of our faith. I appreciate it. My question is, I understand that this is a shift to ask people to be clear about in-kind donations. I'm curious why there isn't also a cap on in-kind donations, and was that something that was discussed as this was coming up?
The board did discuss that, and we felt that we couldn't easily do that. We felt it was more important. It's imperfect, and we decided that there was not significant risk in not putting a cap on it this time, and we needed to gather information to put on a reasonable cap in the future. But we didn't feel like we knew enough in order to be able to set that kind of limitation.
Yes, if I'm just curious, what would be the harm in just adding the cap across the board?
One of the reasons was part of the things you noticed we only gathered 500 and above. Mm-hmm. And one of our concerns was that people, if we put on an initial cap with not understanding how the process worked and what we saw was happening, people might just force everything underneath that $500 limit and play some kinds of games. I think we just didn't feel like we had enough information to make that kind of decision at this point. And we thought this would be an opportunity to gather information. Do you want to say more, Donna?
I'd say two things. I think Michael is exactly right. We did talk about this, and we were very concerned that we don't know, for example, how much support the candidates received from things like donations of airline miles. We do know that the cash limits we talked about were at ranges that, when we talked to Peter, for example, that these were bearable. We did not know. We just didn't know what the harm would be if we put those limits in, and so we were really wary about it. But we had those same concerns you're expressing, which is why we wanted to gather the information so that if it really is an issue, the next time that we have an election, we would be able to go there. I also wanted to respond to the question about the moderator. And I've been thinking about that question, about why this was really in the presidential campaign. So we are leading into an election for the UUA president right now. If we're going to have campaign limits that impact the election of the next president, they need to be approved at this General Assembly. And the proposal came to us from the Presidential Search Committee. We really didn't talk about the moderator campaign and whether the same limits would be appropriate for the moderator campaign. But we recognize that we have a little time to get that right for the moderator campaign, but there's some urgency to make a decision for the presidential campaign at this General Assembly.
Thank you.
Thank you for those questions. Is there another clarifying question that someone would like to raise? And if you have amendments, this is the time to bring them forward.
I'm the Reverend Dr. Matthew Johnson. I'm the co-chair of the Presidential Search Committee. So not a clarifying question, but an answer. In addition to what you all said about the in-kind donations, part of the concern about the committee had was that some of those in-kind donations might actually come from our congregations. So if a congregation hosts a candidate, is that an in-kind? So it just became very complicated very quickly. So that's one more data point, and think of, let's get more research, and then we'll go from there.
Thank you very much. And do we have any online delegates who wish to ask any questions or make a comment? Or okay. So I think we're just waiting for this possible amendment. Okay, so we have an amendment to consider. Okay.
So he has an amendment.
Okay, so would you like to read it, or do you?
Well, I can read it off.
Oh, okay, very good.
I can read it off the screen. My name is Tom Hackett. I'm from the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Poughkeepsie, New York, and I would like to suggest a change to the wording of the proposed amendment to the bylaws to add "or moderator" after the word "president," and to substitute the words "campaign" for "president" or "moderator" for the words "presidential campaign." I think the gist of this is pretty obvious. I do understand that we have 4 more years before another moderator election. Nevertheless, I thought this would be a good time to propose this amendment for 2 reasons. One being that opening up the bylaws to change, and this may just be my personal observation or personal preference, opening up the bylaws to change year after year is generally not a good idea. Mm-hmm. And, you know, why not take care of it now? The other is that I think it sends a message about the parity between the moderator and the president in terms of their elections. So that's why I would advocate for this change to be included in the amendment this year. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions or comments about this proposed amendment? All right, then I'd like to take a straw poll to see where people are with this. If you would raise your delegate cards if you are in favor of this proposed amendment. Any from the online? Okay. And all those opposed to this amendment, please raise your cards. Okay, we got that. So 5 pro and 2 con from the online delegates. And what was the number in the room?
15.
So 15 pro. So 20 pro and how many? And 2 con. Okay, great. That's very helpful. Are there any other amendments? So the person presenting this amendment. Oh, okay.
Susan Weaver, a member of the Board of Trustees. I just have a friendly amendment that under the line that begins, "no single donor," it says including the candidate themselves right now. That should read the candidate himself or herself. It's singular. It's singular.
Okay, are there clarifying questions or comments about this proposed change?
So, despite being a minister, I don't know grammar that well. Could it be themself? We're looking for non-binary gender language.
No, we're looking for singular matching singular and
okay.
Plural matching plural.
So what's the singular we need
singular
to use?
Singular is candidate, so it needs a single pronoun, which would be himself or herself. Themself and plural.
Well, that's not going to fly. We have candidates who are neither himself nor herself. So we need a term that doesn't involve a gender binary,
right.
Which is
right.
Why my colleagues and friends use themselves.
Correct.
They're grammatically incorrect.
But just the justice point is the more important one.
Friendly suggestion, simply including the candidate. That covers it. If the candidate can't spend the money, I don't see why the self is redundant, basically, however it is. Just say including the candidate.
Would the proposer accept that friendly amendment? We just had a proposed friendly amendment to your amendment.
What was that?
That the language be changed to say including the candidate, kind of eliminating the need for the modifier. Can someone read that, what that would look like? This is, you know, sometimes it's messy, right? This is our democratic process at work. We're holding values in tension. We really value grammar. That's very important to us as Unitarian Universalists. But even more importantly, we want to be inclusive in our language. So we're finding a way to meet both. And I think we have. So could I hear the final language proposed then? So is that your new amendment?
Yes.
To delete the word themselves entirely.
You have my corrected language. I just want to be clear.
So that would read, no single donor, including the candidate and any organization or group.
It is possible. So, do you have a clarifying comment or question about this matter?
I want to raise an ouch moment about what just happened.
Yes.
That was really painful, and it felt very judgmental and non-inclusive. And as a parent of a non-binary child who chooses to use they, them, themselves, and language changes, I believe that the right relationship team needs to be made aware of this, and I want you to know that that hurt.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that feedback. That's important. Are there any other comments or questions on this amendment before we take a quick straw poll on that? Anything online? Okay. So all those in favor of making this change, removing the word themselves from the text, please raise your delegate cards. Thank you. All those opposed? Thank you. Do you have that number?
That's 17 pro, 2 con.
17 pro, 2 con, and from our online delegates?
Can we just give them a minute there?
Yes.
Six pro, 1 con.
Okay, 6 pro, 1 con. Do we have another amendment? We have two more? So no more amendments. Okay. That concludes our business here today. Thank you so much for coming and doing this work of our democratic process. And a special thank you to our online delegates for being part of the technology wave that we're still trying to ride. So thank you all, and have a wonderful rest of your General Assembly.
Thank you.
So we should take that up with the regulations team. Are you still involved in that? Or?
I'm not, but I could.
I think that, I appreciate your feedback. And
I've been all right. Yeah. Well, one of the things I have not did not post yet. Because the people who appropriately
thank you for your
choose
participation.
To post it online haven't chosen to do so yet.
Yeah, good
but
for
I
you.
Can tell you, I'm going to be a grandparent. Yeah. So it's January 5th.
Thank you, George.
So Matthew's engaged. He's going to get married.
Well, Michael has served on that before, so he said he would bring it. So I think we've got it covered, but it's important.
In the midst of all that, he's been a set of ministries.
Oh, okay. I thought, and I guess I did. I just said thank you, but I didn't say yes, we'll do that. Okay.
They told a lot of people. Yeah,
okay, I appreciate that feedback. Yeah, thank you. Okay, but we'll address that as well, and hopefully that person will know that it did happen. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom.
How are you?
Thank you.
So close that loop and let people know that we were going to, in fact, take it to the right collision team, which Michael said he would do. But I didn't report that.
This is about care with language.
Okay.
So are we incorporating both of these?
This one.
I'm on the bubble on this one.
Well, see, I raised this issue with you months ago, and you said we're going to take it up closer to the election for moderator.
That's what I said here, and I lost that argument.
Apparently. And so
I want to talk to Jim about what to do with this one. My inclination is to not incorporate it,
okay,
and have the debate happen on the floor. Can Jim speak to an amendment as the moderator?
Well, he can explain why we elected, the board elected, not to incorporate it.
Right.
And what I would imagine he would say is something to the effect was, we don't want to necessarily have the same provision for the moderator election, and I promise you that something will be brought forward with respect to campaign finance at least 2 years before the moderator election.
Right.
Okay?
I think that would be, that's my inclination, is to not incorporate it unless Jim says he's very comfortable with incorporating it.
Right. I think the other thing, the other really, this woman raised a really interesting point.
She did.
And I said to her, I said, this subject is not being amended this year, so you can't touch it. If I were you, I'd write a letter to the board about it and about campaign finance disclosure.
Oh, did you get it? Thank you.
So,
I think it was a great question.
It was a great question. And I said, you should bring it up. I said, it should be on next year's GA. And given there's a whole year before the election, I still think
there's
still plenty of time to have the impact. But she's, the idea of reporting disclosure the day of GA.
And that you have to write to get it?
From the secretary?
Right.
I mean, this is less disclosure than federal is required, right? Or state required.
I thought it was a great question.
It was a great question.
What she was asking, it was a very good question, and I appreciated how non-anxious she was about being unable to put an amendment on that part right now.
Yeah.
She handled it beautifully. Yeah.
No, it was wonderful. She really had raised a good point. And it's something the board should think about in terms of disclosure. I mean, understand where she was coming from. She's a member, and I may mispronounce her name, the woman who lost the race against Jim. Tamara is in her congregation, and Tamara was not comfortable raising money. Tamara was uncomfortable raising money, and so it was always Jim was getting all this money and making progress, and Tamara chose not to. And Tamara would have made something of the fact that Jim went out and raised all this money, and she chose not to, except the fact that there was no disclosures. Disclosures required.
So that handicapped her.
So that she viewed that as handicapping her.
I view raising money as one of the qualifications of one of our leaders.
I hope so.
I'm serious.
Well, it has to be.
It has to be.
Well, and it clearly is, and we state that's part of.
I
feel like for the presidents, the numbers are big enough to be a challenge, but low enough that it's not.
If you're running for president and you can't raise money, I'm sorry. Maybe you lack one of the essential qualifications for the job.
And that could be said of moderator, too. I think in terms of that level of leadership.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it's
that
explicit.
You draw people to you that,
the president is going out expressly raising large gifts. That's part of his or her job.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay,
let's talk to Jim. We
want to talk about your transforming GA.
And I know you wanted me to stay, so here I am. I'm not sure exactly what you need me for, but I'm happy to stay.
This isn't about amendments. This is about, so for transforming GA, where we are headed, we've been talking about what are we going to do, every other year? I think where we've come out is, first off, what we're trying to do, the purpose of this work, is to make it more possible for us, the delegates, the people come to General Assembly, to do things that really matter to our ministry in the world and within our congregations when we're here, so that we have time to do those things. We think that moving, if you look at our bylaws, the amount of space devoted to defining intricate detail what must go on to our agenda is pretty overwhelming.
It is.
And in addition, even the rules that we develop are around constraining pretty tightly. And Denny talks about how over the last decade, things got more constrained for a whole variety of reasons. She's not judgmental, but we really built an edifice where there's very little room for anything unexpected to happen at General Assembly.
Some of us like that.
I know we do. I knew you were in that camp. That's why we only talk to you.
Some of us don't like surprises.
Well, but so there's two types of surprises. So we've heard a variety of things when we talk to people, but two or three big things come back over and over. Number one, we really do want to do meaningful things when we come together, and we have tastes of them while we're here. We've had tastes of them. You know, we go back to Phoenix as an example of one of those tastes. Selma is probably the taste of something we can do meaningful when we're together. About not doing things like we're doing here every year. You know, we've heard some of that here. It doesn't move us forward. It's internally focused. But we still want to come together every year. We find a lot of value in coming together. So we've got those things. And then we also hear that we really need to find a way to make General Assembly more accessible. So let's talk about the content first. The idea that we have is that we want to really simplify the bylaws to kind of the minimal structure that we need legally and probably procedurally to hold the space, but without detailed definitions of what will be on the agenda at any one point in time. And one constraint that we would put on is that internally focused work, such as changing the bylaws as it applies to us, would be done no more frequently than every other year. You could do it every other year. And so then the rest of the time, we would be doing things that do not involve amending the bylaws. And I think where we primarily get anxious is if we start tinkering around with our bylaws and we have to live with that for forever.
Well, and also, if you, and it's going to be a big, if you don't specify who puts things on the agenda, you are going to have a fight to a fair use about who can bring things up that they want people to discuss, for example, right? There's a certain topic, right? That some people want to discuss, and other people would like that not discussed.
And I think that, I think that the task for the board is to, and the board and the delegates is to kind of hit, to find ways to reach out and to, I can envision, so think of the AIW process. We have a way to take in a whole bunch of ideas to sort through and see, actually those don't fit the criteria, things that we're going to do here. We've defined what they are. And here's how we're going, and then we choose from. The delegates have a lot of input. They have a lot of say as to what goes on to that agenda, but there are some kind of safety buffers around it. You could envision kind of the overall agenda analog to something like that. Would be one way to do it. You could have something where the board does linkage work and the board is setting an agenda based on intentional work with the congregations each year. But that the, so that the, what you might want to do is, if I start thinking about what those minimal structures look like, and this won't happen to you, so you can start thinking about them. Who is ultimately in control of the agenda, and what kinds of safety valves, objects and safety valves do you want to open the net? But the idea is to open the doors and maybe let a little more creativity into the process. So think about where those structures are. Did you go to the 2550 lectures? Gail Seavey talked about, from a theological perspective, she talked about these webs or nets, where she talked about our institutions and our theology as having become so constrained that there was no room for disagreement. And she talked about how the free church was actually founded on the whole concept is that there must be space for the Spirit to run free and go where it will go. But you still had to have some structure. So the metaphor, I thought it was a useful metaphor.
I just want to make sure they tested it.
And I'm going to have such a good attorney. how you get enough structure to hold a center so it's not so crowded and leave enough white space for creativity to happen. So that's the basic idea.
Out of order then, and how do you decide, you know?
How something comes up for an unscripted time.
So one of the things that I think, so we have, maybe we need to add this into, because we've really talked about not just wide open, we've really talked about kind of having a cycle where we have, one General Assembly that is focused on justice in the world, and we might have another one that's focused on matters of theology, so that there's a framing that and I think those framings don't have to necessarily be written in the bylaws, but they would have to be communicated and decided so that this is in order.
But do you have to change the bylaws to do that?
We kind of have to take some things we don't, but some of I do think that the. I think we're going to want to change the CSW process, and they have appetite to do this. I think we're going to want to change some of the rules around the AIW process. And I think, kind of as we've been talking about with the regions and the districts, I think we need to think of, I would recommend to think about what some of the other on-ramps are for ideas to come from someplace besides the board.
Because
nothing would stop us from doing that now.
No, I know. And as it is, this proposal on region, diminishes the likelihood that districts or regions are going to put things on the agenda.
I get that, but that's, and that is part of the, I get that. One of the amendments that they proposed might actually help that, which I'm not as unopposed to it as I thought I might be, which is to just say, hey, don't give me those stinking geographic restrictions.
Right, just open
it up. I'm okay with that. Open it up.
I think that the geographic restrictions were designed to promote diversity.
Right.
Okay, make sure you've got congregation.
I
don't think that's all that. That'll get all excited about it.
I'm not that excited about it either. And so my sense is that when it comes up, we should speak against it as the board.
Yeah.
I think that the community is in favor of it.
Right.
And I think we should incorporate it.
Okay.
That's where my head is at.
Okay. I want to have a better understanding, it's a longer conversation than this one, of what you imagine. I appreciate you bringing me into the discussion. What you imagine GA being.
I won't be able to.
Well, can we chase that?
No.
But she's going to be consulting.
No, but I mean, I think.
I think the conversation, I think it would be really helpful for you to have a conversation. The conversation would be really great if it could be with you, Denny, Jim, Susan Weaver, and myself.
Yeah.
That would be.
I'm happy to have that conversation.
We should do it.
I mean, my job, as I see it, is to help you revise the bylaws to achieve your objectives.
And
I don't sufficiently understand your objectives at this point. You understand, right?
I'm not sure I completely understand because it's an idea.
And I think one of my hopes for this time is that we are able to write bylaws so that as things change and interests change, we don't have to keep coming back to the bylaws to change them.
I agree with that.
And decide to have a gathering where we don't do business without changing the bylaws. Remember, we had to pass something like the AIWs. And I had
right.
To, you know, so I, that's what I mean by building flexibility
yeah.
in.
I'm
so
not sure as a practical matter you'd be happy with a GA working with the board. I think that every year the board is going to have business it's going to want to do. So it'd be good.
But some things you can do, you know, so if I talk about, if I think about, what I talk about is making time to talk about the things that are meaningful to us. So some of the things that you could do with that time could be things like, you know, appreciative inquiry workshops and, you know, facilitating conversations where you don't know what it's going to come out on top of.
big a group is going to be in that? How many people are going to be in that group? We're so happy we've got 5,000 or so people here. Justine, you're going to lead an inquiry group of 100 people, and they're going to see 50 of those? They're going to be 50 of those?
Leading an inquiry group with 100 or 400 is not that different.
Yeah.
But maybe people want more.
Having done both.
I don't know. I mean, at the times when we have tried breaking up into groups, remember, I think it was in 2013 where we had the Twitter feed and people were hopping in different groups.
Right.
Well, that's right, yeah.
It was hard to have good, you know, big discussions. You get a group of 200.
Right. Say off the cuff is usually not as well thought out as something I spend time thinking about in advance. I don't do my best thinking off the top of my head.
Oh, okay.
It just means a lot to like get the nickel.
Oh, good. Okay. Thanks for the green card reminding me to do it.
Yeah, Ed put that there. It's great. I did have one because of the.
So I'm not sure of it.
Yeah. I'm going to ask, is that okay, Donna?
Yeah, it was on one of the...
One of the amendments that was being discussed, it got called to a voter and voted before they...
Oh, before okay, because of the delay.
Because of the delay.
Okay.
Yeah, send it to me at...
thank you.
D. Harrison.
12, 13 hours of
population. At UUA.org. Okay. Thank you.
I love that.
Why did we not continue it? UU University?
I love that.
Yeah, I don't know why we didn't continue it.
Because you would choose a track. You would come in and you'd say, I want to look at theology. I want to look at...
That was great.
Multiculturalism.
Yeah.
And I don't know why we didn't continue
it.
Because it was very well received. And I think that was trying to do the same thing. It was trying to talk about things that matter.
And go deep.
I think it was.
Salt Lake City.
I did one in St. Louis and Salt Lake.
You guys, I gotta go.
No, I went to go listen
right.
to Gail.
Are you good?
I'm good. Thank you, Justin.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
This was easier, wasn't it?
Than what?
Than last year?
Well, yeah, now I knew what the.
Now that you know.
But you know how much work
you
do?
All right. And
thank you.
But maybe we're talking about less time. Well, for one thing, I do think you could cut down the time of general sessions a lot.
I'll write this thing we gotta say tomorrow, Susan.
Well, you're going to write it now, right? You're going to write it now.
But you know what? The time, one thing that happens in general session is really nice is worshiping together.
Yeah.
And singing together. Getting 5,000 people to sing.
Yes.
Together. Energizing. And it's fun. It can't happen anywhere else. And it's not like we got 23 hours of plenary, which we had three years ago. 23 hours of plenary.
Just so we could. Yeah, I think what I'd like to see this board do is if we have an amendment, does it really have to come this year?
Yeah, that's a good question. I felt listening to Rob Eller Isaacs this morning, I thought I was listening to David Stockman or Reagan telling me how many regulations we were cutting.
That's how you measure success. You throw out the regs.
I mean, it sounded like classic Republican rhetoric. That's what I thought I was listening to. It was hysterical.
But a lot of it kept just is perceived vision in terms of God in the end, and it's just.
Listen.
But it was too much.
It sounded ridiculous what you guys were. You know, the amount of staff time spent reporting to the board on monitoring, oh my God, do a job.
And then the amount of time the board's actually really reading those reports.
Of course they weren't. I hope not. All right, Justine, thank you very much.
Thank you, Justine.
If you had two people who were more thoughtful, you wouldn't have gotten yelled at.
Yeah. Well, it's part of how we do community. We have to. It was one of those, like, car accident happening in front of me moments, I must say.
Did you?
you perceive anything, or did it?
Well, I hadn't looked at the amendment before, and so when it was brought up, I thought, uh-oh, this is going to be a problem.
Oh, you did catch it right then?
Yeah. But
you mean right when it was brought up?
Well, I understood that was going to be an issue for people, and I thought, but I was with you. I thought if we can correct the grammar, then that will eliminate the problem, and I think her problem with us was that, no, you should say themselves, because that's an actual correct usage of that word, and I kind of disagree with
that. Well, that was wrong. I mean, look, you can handle inclusiveness and grammar correctly. You just need to think about it a little bit. You need to think about it. You know, we do this stuff here on the fly, and if we had, it's a classic, if we had had more time to think about this, we would have done it right the first time, but, you know, we didn't. We do it on the fly.
Yeah, I still don't think.
I don't know if
yeah.
How it got past me the first time.
Well,
obviously, I'd seen
it.
Now
on the board, I would have seen it before. I almost didn't catch it.
Yeah, I didn't catch it either. You know how you read the same paragraph five times and you see something new the fifth time.
But it was probably Susan, but she may have been.
You know,
to be
grammar is really gendered, obviously. So, like in some languages, if there's one man and 99 women, you use the male pronoun. And I think some people take issue with that.